Welcome to the Track and Food Podcast. You're listening to episode, what are we at now? Episode 13, 14?
14. Amazing.
I'm your host, Jamie Ma. This is a podcast based in Vancouver, BC. We like to talk about food culture and the things that surround those forums. My host, co-host, I say, as always, is Mickey McLeod.
I can take over host duties if it's too much for you.
Oh, you want to take over? You want to take over host?
Hello, duties? Everyone.
Yeah, how would you start? Would you say anything differently?
I'd have to think about it. I don't know.
Yeah, look at you. You're already
putting me on the spot.
Yeah, exactly.
Already.
Nah, you're a good sidekick.
Thanks, pal.
You're my Newman to. I'm Kramer. You're Newman.
I'm your Russell Westbrook to your Kevin Durant.
What?
There we go.
Shaq to your Kobe, or Kobe to your Shaq.
Oh,
you know, want to talk with, like, just so you know, Jamie is like the biggest diehard Lakers fan.
Oh yeah, so the Kurt Rambis to Magic Johnson. No,
I think just Kobe Bryant. He sucks. Kobe Bryant.
We're not going
dick,
way back.
Basically.
We're not going way back.
So we'll bug about that a bit later.
I do not. You know, I've had a lot of friends tell me that whenever I don't know if you guys have seen, what was that one scary movie where the guy's trying to hook up with his girlfriend and he like gets her to like put on all the football uniform. He's like, put the helmet on, put the
yours would be a Kobe jersey. Yeah.
So awesome. A lot of people say that to me. Like, do you get your girlfriend to put on like a Kobe jersey when you guys are hooking up?
That's just fucking weird as hell.
I may have asked her to do that one or two times.
All right, I'll cut that out if you want. Or I'll just leave it on, whatever.
Anyways, welcome to this episode. Thanks for joining us again. Our last episode just went live a couple days ago. We spoke with Chef Jeff Koop, who is now working at Farmer's Apprentice. Do check that episode out. He really kind of talked us through kind of his experience coming up in the game, why he's enjoyed starting as a dishwasher at Earl's and then moved on to some sous chef jobs and then eventually ran Mammy Taylor's for 2 years. Shout out to Ron.
Ron, hello. Ron Oliver, friend of the show.
And
who really hasn't started washing dishes? I think we've all washed dishes at some point.
And I'm still washing dishes now.
Yeah, that's true.
But following on this trend of chefs, we are very excited to bring on two guests today. One of them is actually a returning guest.
First returning guest.
Yes. You.
Woo-hoo. Bruce Noller.
Hey, Bruce Noller, who is, I think, our guest on episode 6. We brought on his partner in his company called Ono Vancouver. So his partner is TJ Conwy.
TJ Conwy, yeah.
TJ Conwy. We brought them on today because we're very excited to talk about their upcoming passion project, Chefs in the Hood, which they're going to be launching their second. Is this an annual thing now for you?
Second
guys?
One under the Chef in the Hood banner. We've done a few other ones as well that a little smaller. This one's definitely a lot bigger.
Perfect. Awesome. And that's going to be happening next month on October 20th, which is a Saturday. We wanted to bring them on today, talk about this event that they're looking to plan on, how this is kind of shaping what they're looking to grow with their company, some of the people that they're bringing on, because it sounds like they're bringing a lot of really cool chefs in the city. And gentlemen, how are you guys today?
Good. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, exactly. So how does it feel to have the pressure of being our second or first repeat guest, should I say?
Yeah.
No pressure.
High bar, man. It's a high bar.
No problem. the pressure of Mickey relaxed. Taking over host is is a bigger cloud.
Hey, watch your mouth. What's going on
there? I could host.
What's been happening with you since we last spoke?
Well, yeah, we're just in the mix of planning the Chefs in the Hood coming up in a month. That's pretty time consuming. And we're getting busy now. So just managing time is kind of our biggest challenge right now.
Okay, so why don't we get the obvious out of the way right now? Chefs in the Hood, why don't you guys try to explain this to what it is, what your goal is, what you guys are looking to accomplish, and why people should check it out.
So Chefs in the Hood, basically just collaboration between a bunch of chefs that we know in the business, a bunch of chefs that want to do something together, and also while giving back to the community. So that's really what it's all about. It started as three of us, me, Bruce, and Sid Sakdiva from Pacific Restaurant Supply. We basically started it just to get it just so that we can have something to do in our already busy life. But we basically said, you know what, we're good at doing this. Let's get something going and bring a bunch of different chefs. And the first one that we did about six different chefs around from different neighborhoods, and we were able to capture a bunch of our own market basically. But so now this one that we're doing we're basically gonna make it double that. So yeah, no pressure, but you know,
hey,
it's gonna be awesome.
Okay, so you are enlisting. From what I gathered, checking on the Instagram feed and your website, you guys are enlisting chefs from different neighborhoods in Vancouver. So I think you have Chinatown, Gastown, probably Kitsilano, probably East Van, stuff like that.
Yep.
And are you getting several chefs from each of these districts? Or
yeah. So I'm just going to rattle off who we have right now. We have Warren Chef, Warren Chow, chef at Juniper Restaurant. Felix Zhao, he used to be in top, he was in Top Chef, Heritage Asian Eatery. Sean Murray from Pan Pacific. Gus, I'm going to butcher this, Steinhofer from Hawksworth, Alessandro Vianello, who's also our partner now, Mariana Gabilondo, and the Dumpling King. The Dumpling King is going to be, check it out.
Okay,
he's
okay.
Got, he's pretty awesome. He's all over social media.
We have a Dumpling King?
Yeah, man, he's awesome. He does this really well. He, basically, he delivers dumpling right to your door, and he's housemade, and his butcher's from Chinatown, all about community as well. Same idea.
That's the first I've heard of the dumpling.
Yeah. Check
thing.
It out later.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah. Jay Harris, returning guy, and then us, of course. And we also have a best pastry chef in town from Miko Moriton, from Mott 32, and Acorn Restaurant, Brian Liptek, for all those vegans out there.
Yes.
Nicky.
Shout out to
Nicky's
my
happy.
Vegan people, hummus life.
Hey, by the way, I forgot to mention, I actually went to Acorn last night for dinner.
You did, yes.
I did, yes. I wanted to take photos and send them to you, you know, just to kind of rub it in.
You should have.
But
been so standoffish lately.
I hadn't been there in a long time. I read about it recently, just on something just kind of popped up on my radar and reminded me of Acorn. I hadn't been there probably in 3 years. No reason for not going there. I just kind of always forget about it.
Yeah.
Girlfriend
it's
had
up
never,
there in mid-Main. It's not like...
Yeah, girlfriend had never been there. We went. It was busy. It's packed. And got a great table in the corner there. And we had a couple dishes. They were delicious black bean soup. We had an awesome corn dish with some potatoes and some eggplant. And I usually hate eggplant, but it was really done well. It was like... They said it was like... and then they had... what else did I have on there? We had like this really kind of rich mushroom kind of like pappardelle.
Oh, they
dish.
Brought the pappardelle back. Oh, yeah,
is that something that they're like known
it
for?
It comes on and off. I think it's like a fall seasonal dish.
So good. That was really good. It was rich, though. Everything was delicious. We had drank some local wines. I love the kind of concept of what they're doing, because all their wines by the glass and everything was BC focused. Everything was just BC. I'm not always in favor of the straight BC focused wines.
Right. Yes.
Which
well documented.
Sometimes irritates me, but I get the supporting local. So
yeah,
I respect that.
Well, I'm glad for me, obviously. People listening know that I am a vegan. I eat a vegan diet. So it's good you guys have some representation from Acorn.
Yeah, we also have our vegan guy from Ono, Vancouver, right over there, Bruce Nollert. May want to speak about it.
Yeah, you should see Bruce's face right now.
TJ likes to put me in this box because usually what happens, it's a couple days before the event, I'm looking at the menu and I see pork, salmon, beef, chicken, and, you know, like, where the fuck are the plants? Like, everybody's eating plants now. So I end up taking one for the team and doing the plant-based dish. It's a cool challenge. I like it.
Yeah, it's nice to, like, make sure that you have to, like, you know, because people that are vegan are, like, you know, weird.
Well, especially in Vancouver,
you have to make really weird food for people that are weird.
You're in Vancouver. You have to, like, we've talked about this many times, but you have to have
it's the percent. It's got to be, like, 30, 40%. People, right?
Like, could you imagine just being vegan? That'd be just such a weird lifestyle.
But at the end of the day, too, when more people are eating vegan diet, we actually have a better planet, because now, you know, it doesn't grow as much. You don't need to grow as much. So I thank you so that I can eat more pork.
Come back on the podcast anytime.
No, but it's awesome.
It's true, though.
But with you guys getting Acorn, like, that's awesome. I mean, you're the best vegan restaurant, the best vegetarian restaurant in the city by far. So that's...
Oh, yeah.
That's
there. Yeah, absolutely.
You leave there satisfied without having to even think about meat. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yo, and everything you eat, like, I think what I love most about what they do is a lot of vegan places are like, or vegetarian places, or like, we need to recreate the burger or this or that.
Yeah.
Whereas them, they're just like, no, we're just going to make delicious food. We're just going
to
make delicious food with the vegetables. And we're not trying to make something taste like meat. We're just making delicious food.
Yeah.
And while you order your food and you eat everything, like, even if you like meat or whatever, everything I ate, I was like, I was never thinking, where's the steak or where's the whatever.
balanced enough with all the flavors.
Yeah, like it's just good food.
Yeah.
And I think I wish a lot more restaurants did that. You know, they don't feel like they have to imitate or try to cater to that meat eater. Just make delicious food with vegetables.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, like it didn't.
This is like really turning into a vegan friendly podcast. I'm so shocked. We should probably talk about non-vegan things though, since that's the majority. 90% of the menu is going to be.
It's going to be more and less than that, actually. So we should have we should have a lot of vegan food, vegetarian and vegan food in there, so at least 30-40%.
30-40%. Yeah. Wow, very nice. Yeah.
So this is happening on October 20th. Where is it going to be taking place?
At location at the Law Courts Inn.
Law Courts Inn.
Okay. Yeah, it's right above the Supreme Court. It's a big banquet space up there. It's really cool.
Robson Square. Basically.
Robson Square, yeah.
Okay, so a nice central location.
Yeah. Yeah, close to the transit.
Describe to me what it's going to look like if you're coming in as a guest. Is it going to be like booths everywhere? And are you asking chefs to create, is there a theme that they're supposed to kind of work with?
Yeah, so basically the way it's going to look is it's in this really cool setting with floor-to-ceiling windows kind of looking over downtown. So the city is just really kind of popping all around.
Hidden gem in the city, for sure.
It really is. I think most people, when they see it, will be blown away that this is just sitting right there. Usually you walk right by it.
Oh, does it look over where that they have that little waterfall thing?
Yeah.
Like the law course? Yeah. It's a little cool little oasis up there, man.
It's cool, The patio is all covered with glass. You can see up, and then there's a huge pond with a waterfall.
How'd you guys find the space?
We know the chef that runs it.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
Is this just like, why would they have a space like that?
Well, they do functions and lunches for judges, and there's a lot of people that go there for lunch. Oh. So it's more of a day business.
You can go there for lunch.
You can do weddings there. You can do.
Let us know. We can set you up.
Yeah. All these things about Mexico.
If there's high profile judges eating, they kind of eat in the one corner, kind of isolated and separated, but then you can go and eat there as well.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah.
Well, it's kind of like that little area does have a lot of cool little. And especially that building.
Because you got Bacchus.
It's similar to like if you go into Gastown, you know, people know that you can actually go in through the buildings and there's like all these mezzanines and really cool architectural structures in Gastown. People just like walk down the street. Yeah.
What do you mean? What?
So if you're walking down Water Street and you go into these shops, some of them you can actually go super in all the way to the trains.
Alley, right?
And then all the ones that are on the south side actually have like these crazy weird stairways and like structures where you can go up and like skylight and all this kind of Gastown has all these weird little those, the more you know. Well, you're not that probably Chinatown has a similar building.
So I would assume so.
Where you live.
How many dead bodies do you think are in there, those places?
Man, too many to count. I don't know. Was there a big mob contingent in Vancouver the early days of Gastown?
Are you looking for new spots or what?
Hey man, I love watching Dexter. You know, I gotta figure out.
TJ, did you tell anybody you were here? Yeah, it's gonna be cool. I mean, you're gonna walk into this kind of cool setting that's kind of unsuspected, and like you said, it's gonna be stations. So all the chefs will be kind of self-sustained in their own little station, representing a dish that kind of represents their hood or something close to their heart and their hood. And so it'll be a lot of diverse flavors and a lot of cool different techniques and all the stuff that the chefs like to cook with. And there'll be some bars and interesting cocktails and stuff like that. So you'll basically walk around and just kind of at your own pace go graze and drink. And
so is it a course breakdown or is it?
No, it's a reception style.
Reception style. Yeah. Oh, okay.
So there's going to be DJ.
So was last year course or was it
nope,
same?
No, it's, okay, so it's basically format. Like going to be set up kind of like a night market. You can just kind of go and graze and eat the ones that you choose or eat them all.
So when you buy your ticket, you just walk in and you can just drink and eat as much as you want, or is drinks separate?
There'll be a complimentary cocktail when you come in, and then it'll be cash bar on top of that. Yeah, the ticket prices are pretty pretty low considering the value of the event. That's kind of one thing we're trying to focus on is keeping the ticket prices at a good level.
What's the price?
$75. Yeah.
Okay.
$100 for VIPs, but that's starting to sell out now. So that's good. Yeah.
VIP, what does that get you?
VIP gets you your own area where it's actually a seating area, and as well as your own private, your own chef, basically, that only VIP people can go to. It's barbecue outside, and as well as another bar that's only dedicated for yourself as well, for the VIPs.
You guys did this event last year. Was that the first year of this?
It was actually this year, April.
April?
Yeah.
Okay. in doing that event, you, I think before we went on live, you guys said, you're saying that this event is double the size. You're expecting hopefully 400 people.
Is yeah, I think that's what you guys said. It's a 500 capacity.
500 capacity. From that first event to this one, what would you say are some of the things you've learned most about, like, what works, what doesn't work, and like how you hope to, you know, grow?
Yeah. Well, what we learned from the last event that we have our own network, and we can tap into our network anytime, and we can bring in the same people and have the same experience. They'll have fun. But what we feel is that we have a lot more to offer that we can actually grow outside of our network. So we actually were able to partner with Daily Hive and as well as other sponsors like Silver Chef and Centennial Foods. And so we've grown it with the thinking that as we grow, we can also have tap into all of the network outside of our network, and that we can bring this to the masses, basically. So who knows? Like, after this one, if we're successful, we can keep growing where people are talking to us from Toronto, people are talking to us from Okanagan. So we can actually make this a lot bigger than we can. And at the same time, we haven't talked about it, but we do this in a giving way as well. We're trying to give to the charities that are close to our heart. For example, Dance Legacy is our charity right now. And me and Bruce are actually in the board.
Which charity is this?
Dance Legacy is Bruce. If you wanna,
sure.
Yeah,
yeah. So TJ and I had a cool opportunity to sit on the board of Dance Legacy. It's basically it's a nonprofit. They focus a lot on repurposing food. This is one angle of it, which is kind of a big interest for us. They go around to grocery stores, Department of Fisheries, and there is so much food that's going to go to the landfill, but they pick it up. You know, food at the grocery store that may be unsellable, but it's not expired, maybe has like cracked milk jug or something, right?
One milk jug is cracked, the whole crate is thrown out.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So that's food waste, right?
Are you serious?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, dude. And one day after expiry, these major grocery stores, they just toss everything.
Yeah, we all saw it on the news, right?
The staff gets first pick, they just like toss everything.
Why doesn't the government just make it where they have to make it mandated that grocery stores can't do that and they have to give it to the food bank?
They did in France.
Yeah.
Like that it's illegal. Absolutely. You can't dump it.
We can start that here now.
Yeah. Like you can't do that. Anything that you guys deem you can't sell, you have to donate to the food bank or you have to sell to something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That would be
That seems like a totally reasonable thing. It's
like how much food would you guys say?
So to give you an example, one grocery store per month, this dollar amount was kind of estimated roughly maybe 10 years ago. It's probably up to 100,000 a month.
Of lost revenue?
Yeah, of product. So it actually costs these businesses money to have it removed and put it in the compost. So it's actually cheaper for them to give it away.
Or just throw it out.
Or throw it out.
So here's which a better is question. What usually happens.
Yeah. If I'm a grocery store and I'm running a business like this and I'm throwing away $100,000 worth of product a month, why not just order less?
Because the society needs those full shelves to... That's kind of what we've encouraged here, right?
Sure, unfortunately. I get that, but I mean, I would 100%, if I walked into a grocery store, I'd say, our shelves look a lot less empty because we are trying to maintain
minimal waste. Yeah, unfortunately, everybody needs to do it. It's a big shift because, you know, even myself, like being aware of this and try to follow that, I go to a grocery store and I go to the produce, and if it looks depleted, like it gives me that perception that it's...
Must be something wrong
old,
with it.
Yeah, or exactly. It's like, why is this stuff here, right? So even myself, like I catch myself in that perception as well.
Same here.
So it needs a major shift, right? So this is a great thing that they do. And it's basically one guy in a van with a partner and they just go around. So they're at this point where they want to build this project called the Dance Warehouse, which they want to build this warehouse where they can start receiving all this, hire on a couple chefs and bring all this food in to process it. In return, they donate it back to institutions that don't have funding for food and programs like that. The major
shelters and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. The major thing they do is they provide therapy for mental illness as well for, you know, kids brought up in trauma, sexual abuse, drug abuse, and stuff like that. The government kind of leaves them at a point where the free therapy isn't enough. So they kick in and provide like kind of customized one-on-one therapy. So, you know, if this person here needs an extra month or two to kind of get on their feet, they provide that.
Yeah.
So it's
and they also train them to be truck drivers and where we will we're hoping to come in Ono, Vancouver, to try and build them a curriculum so that we can actually teach these kids how to cook, and in turn take all those food insecurity, like all the food that they're taking, and we're able to now produce something for all the shelters and actually have decent food while teaching these kids how to actually cook, so that later on they can work in the society once they're ready to go, once they're a bit more stable.
That's awesome. How did you guys get linked up with this charity?
Actually, Mickey knows Joe Tablin from Fairmont. He was connected through them through some other groups. And he just reached out to me and said, I think you need to meet Barb, who's the executive director. And yeah, from there on, it was just TJ and I just hopped right on. It was a good fit. And we just want to support them.
So, Joe Tablin?
Yeah.
Wow. Shout out to Joe.
Shout out to Joe. So in bringing it back to your questions earlier, like this format that we have, Chefs in the Hood, the first one, we were able to give back to the Union Gospel Mission after school kids program, and now we're given to a bit larger, a bit more of a bigger program. So who's to say that if we keep doing this, make it bigger and bigger, how much more people we can help too, right? So that's our main motivation doing this thing.
That's awesome.
Well, yeah. I think that to me, like, obviously the event is amazing, the whole concept is amazing, execution is amazing. That to me is a really a big aspect of it,
and it's going to be good food. Like, that's all that matters, really. Absolutely. At the end of the day, whoever's paying for that $75 or $100, they're going to come in, they're going to be satisfied, they're going to have really good vegan food, and also really good just like well executed from the heart passion-based
also
food, you know?
Peace of mind knowing that they're helping their local community and also charities. Yeah. Well, that'd be amazing pairing would be Trash Tiki with this event. So do you guys know Trash Tiki?
No.
So they do a zero waste tiki cocktail program. Her name's cool. Kelsey Ramage. She's from here. She actually was she worked at Global Group and then was the bar manager at the Oakwood, but then moved to London and now started this Trash Tiki thing. And they're like, now touring
Trash
like
Tiki.
Trash Tiki.
Love it.
So they have a zero waste. So what they do is they license out a bar. They're now doing like full talks and everything, but they go to a bar the night before. They take all of the waste that was accumulated from that night,
food, yeah.
And they take that and they turn it into cocktails. That so they do crazy. Peel. They work with peels and all these different like techniques and stuff
for
like
a minute,
that.
Then my mind went to Portlandia, where people are digging into trash, and we can pickle that.
Yeah, we can pickle that. That's so funny, Portlandia. Yeah, we can pickle that. Hilarious.
Yeah, that's cool.
That'd be like a super interesting because it just like
yeah, but yeah, it's look it up. So yeah. Are they making tiki drinks?
It's all tiki drinks. Yeah.
Are you trying to get these people like hammered or what?
Well, you're drinking a tiki drink, so yeah absolutely. Yeah.
I think
just
we've all
drink with sexy drinking, like one or two drinks, you know, responsible.
Yeah. You ever had a zombie? Oh my god.
I have had a zombie, like, actually.
San Francisco flashbacks would just come back at me like 2 years ago. Just
we've talked about daiquiris before on this
just, like,
podcast.
One zombie, and then you get one like Navy grog, and you're just like game over.
Yeah, over.
I did the full round of bowls at the Shameful Tiki, and it was with four people, but turns out I was like really, I was the only one really working that straw. So me and my brother-in-law actually, like, we did four or five bowls, which are massive, and then we ordered more because we just wanted to keep going. But it turns out the other two that were sharing the bowls were pretty much sober, and it was just me and my brother-in-law drinking all these bowls. It was a painful morning.
You can tell who's the chef in that table.
Yeah, exactly. Now, those drinks are like, they're serious, like, serious business, man. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. One cool thing I also want to say about Dan's legacy, kind of back to that, is with the labor shortage that we all kind of talk about and know about in the industry, what they're also doing with these people that are going through the therapy, and then with the future warehouse project and the training, the culinary training, the warehouse skills, they're going to re-enter the workforce, but on kind of a light duty. So for a restaurateur that might have trouble finding, you know, dishwashers, bussers, onion peelers, those kind of things, they can hire, actually pay one wage, but receive three of these kids, and they'll share the job. So if one day it's kind of feeling overwhelming or they need some more time for therapy, they can go back and get that. And then the next one's ready to work. So it's kind of hits all the notes, right?
Is this a local Vancouver based
company? They're based out of Ladner.
Ladner, okay.
Delta.
And is Dan just like homage to like someone close to someone in the
Dan,
organization?
Dan has a story. I can't.
Well, Dan is actually the name of a one of the children that went through the welfare system. That basically after the welfare system ran out during when he was 18 years old, he was basically left alone, and he was basically ran into different bad things on the street, and then ended up actually perishing and ended up dying in the street. So that kind of through that they're able to rally this whole movement. So yeah,
awesome. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, they're pretty powerful. Tom, the guy who kind of looks after the therapy part, he's the stories you hear from him will choke you up for sure. And he spends one-on-one time with each of these people. He's got thousands of people, and like now his stories are changing into, oh, I was at this this event and this person came up and hugged me, you know, and it's been 20 years since he's seen this kid, but now this person is, you know, like a police officer or back in society doing well and giving back. So
well, I mean, I think that touches on like a huge thing about society, and it's really cool that you guys are a part of this whole experience. But like, you know, children and young people, all they really need when they're young is just good mentors.
Yeah,
people no matter who, if you have mental people, health or not. Yeah,
yeah,
no.
People
and
who are
someone to talk to, yeah, and like access someone, to like,
and I mean, obviously, great parents and people that are involved in their lives and love. And but like, if you're lucky and you're young and you can get a kid into cooking or sports or art or and music or anything, but if they can get some good mentors, people that lead them, give them something, hope to achieve something in life, I think that's, like you said, you know, it gives them access, and then it gives them something to kind of believe in,
for sure.
You know, yeah, then, it's good times we live in for mental health, because yeah, there's a lot of awareness around, and even in the sports realm, like me and Jamie are huge basketball fans, and DJ, I know you play a little hoop.
Yeah.
Kevin Love, DeMar DeRozan. There's a bunch of players that have come out, and it's just really cool.
And it's the same thing with the cooking business, right? So we are high pressure, you know, work late so much,
PTSD.
And we drown for ourselves in substances and alcohol just to like suppress that mental health issue, and we're right in the midst of that. And that, what better way to like have this, you know, bring this out in the open as well, with the mental health aspect of Dan's legacy as well. And you know, it's something that a lot of the chefs are talking about right now. Chef Table Society of BC, which is I'm a part of, we're actually organizing a talk as well on mental health, specifically for cooks, line cooks, and chefs. So
nice.
You know, I know that at bar, I think there's something called something with the bartenders mental health as well. There's an organization already.
Is there? Do you know about this?
Yeah,
like the BC Bartenders Association.
Yeah, maybe. I think they are possibly, already have something. Yeah, so
bartenders mental health. No.
So well,
that's
it.
But that's interesting, because if you do work in this industry, like, it's high pressure, man. Like, I know we're just serving food and we're serving drinks, but the personalities you run into and the situations you come across, it can be like very, very stressful and trying on your brain. And that's like, you hit the nail on the head with a lot of people in this industry using alcohol and drugs to sort of just decompress and deal with. I know we talked about it on our podcast last time. Yeah. Well, Jamie rides a bike and I drink a glass of wine, but I'm not drinking wine anymore, actually.
But I think a lot of it also comes down to like, people working in the industry are young. They're finding themselves, they're trying to learn about who they are. They're probably maybe still struggling with personal things. Plus, we also like stigma of the society. I mean, like, hospitality still has a weird stigma. Still has a weird stigma that it's like a stepping stone career to something else. And, you know, you can't, you know, oh, you just work as a line cook at some restaurant, or you're a bartender. You're like, you're a nobody. You're not, you know, that's, you know, those are menial jobs. You know, what are you really doing? What's that question we always get?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Do you have a degree?
Or is this? And then when
insurance salesman.
And then if they ask you, and you're like, oh, this is all you do, and like they look down upon you.
That's
so
right.
It's like, you know, and then
hard
obviously
work,
then people, and then people obviously, you know, still work in this industry that party and drink and like to. They're young. They're 20 years old.
Yeah, and then so accessible.
And sometimes
in
that
our
rabbit
industry hole, to do that and to go down that rabbit hole.
And that rabbit
hole
can really take you sometimes.
Well, you can lose your whole teen years and young adult life, right? Because you're working majority of the day, and then you're out partying all night, right? You have no real perspective of what kind of a balanced life looks like, right?
No, and I mean, I wrote an article about just talking about the 14-hour work week for chefs about a year ago, and I had a lot of chefs email me afterwards saying it hit really home, because it's like all of a sudden, you know, you start working in a kitchen, and then, you know, all of a sudden you get a girlfriend, and then all of a sudden, boom, you're 32 years old, and then you're like,
yeah,
is this what I'm going to do with the rest of my life? And
that's right.
You know, I can see we live in a society, especially in North America, where we are taught to believe that we're meant to, you know, unless you're rich and famous, that anything below that is anything below that you should never accept. And, you know, you always, you know, or what's the thing that parents always tell their kids? It's like growing up, it's like you can be anything.
Right.
You know, so you believe that if you're not something, that you're a failure.
Mm-hmm.
So when sometimes I think we need to re-encourage people and kids and stuff like this to believe that it's okay to be you, and just it's okay you, to just, it's okay to, if you like something you do and it makes you happy, that's okay.
For sure.
You know, it's,
but you're talking about the pressure of society as well, like with us cooks not being paid properly as that also
It's like the lowest paid trade out of all the trades out there. You know, like you're giving people something that every single person on this planet needs. Everybody craves it. Everybody loves going out in the industry. People love going out for dinner. And, you know, it's a very demanding trade. The hours are long. The work is hard. It's stressful, as you're both alluding to here. And it's, you know, it's unfortunate that we undervalue that.
Do you think it's changing a little bit?
I think it's changing. I think people's perceptions of this, but I think it comes down to when you're talking about perception, and I've written about perception.
Is
the hardest thing for people to grapple with is their anchoring tendencies. And what I mean by that is food prices and quality and what people deserve are hard for people to grapple when they can go like this. I used to get a hamburger for $6.
100%,
how dare you charge me 25 when in reality it probably should cost 25.
Yeah.
So it's, people are always slow to that stuff. So
I don't know. Just through doing this podcast, we started in late February. It seems like the more people I talk to, the more guests we have on, the more people talk to, it just seems like the stigma is kind of shifting a little bit.
Well, I think people are starting to realize that there is a fucking chef shortage.
Yeah.
Want to work. Why the fuck would you want to work as a chef?
For cooks nowadays to just go somewhere where they're going to be a bit more, you know, a bit more lifestyle, you know.
You're going to give me $14 an hour and you want me to do that for 14-hour days?
Yeah, exactly.
Why the fuck would I want to do that?
No light at the end of the tunnel, like no eventual goal, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I was just talking to an instructor at one of the cooking schools, and out of all the curriculum, there's only 5 local kids in the program.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
They're struggling to fill the seats.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting
dire.
We don't want to end on a dire note, so.
Pretty soon robots are going to be cooking your meal.
Yeah, automation, exactly. Have you seen, there's that at the last Bartender Expose last year, I can't remember what it's called, the one in Vancouver, it's like a trade show. Yeah. There was that machine, it's like a bartending machine that pours like exact measurements.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And
yeah.
Just like
they have that
button.
All
the bartenders are like.
What is it, Tales of the Cocktail or something? No.
It's the local one, I can't remember what it's called.
The one that's always at the Science.
Yeah, 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 yeah. That's what it's called. I can't remember exactly what it's called.
They have that for salad bar in Berkeley now too. Same thing. They just pour the right amount of dressing, right amount of vegetables. Yeah. And
well, I think I've made my opinion very clear on this podcast how I feel about the future of humanity and automation. I'm into it, man. Bring on the robots.
The only thing they can't duplicate
can't reason,
is our palate.
Exactly.
It's the trained palate that we have that, like, it's going to be, everything.
So you always have to have humans in the equation.
Yeah, because you could put, you know, tomatoes in the robot, right? But tomatoes taste so different from where you get them, and right? So
when somebody's actually tasting it before you put it.
Yeah,
I think the real transformation probably will be in the serving staff. Or like, you know, you just go to the table, like they have this in Japan where you just like, there's actually no interaction with anyone. You just press a button on a table. Or like whatever, and then your food just comes out.
I just had this at the airport. You just like sit down. There's an iPad in front of you. You order everything on the iPad, and then someone just brings it to you.
Yeah.
Like, you
don't. Dude, it's beautiful.
There's this new robot out there. It's it's basically like a station, and you go up and you pick like what kind of bowl or stir fry you want. And it's like, it's got all these different selections, and it just like all of a sudden this bowl like pops out of it. So it's all prepared kind of behind the scenes and just comes right out.
Everyone's on their phones anyways. Why would you want to like stop doing what you're doing on your phone to actually interact with someone?
Yeah. Crazy.
That's how I feel working with Bruce all the time.
You can't see, but Jamie is shaking his head profusely right now.
I just got the worst. I got in the stupidest fight with my girlfriend about that last night because I was talking about.
Juicy gossip. Let's have it.
I was mostly just bitching about the idea. Like, I would love to have it where coffee shops didn't have Wi-Fi. And she's like, "That's the fucking stupidest thing in the world."
I was like,
it would be kind of cool to go to a coffee shop where everyone was actually fucking talking to each other,
right?
And she's like,
small talk. It's a whole thing.
And she's like, "Well, they're just going to be on their phones then." And I was like, "Well, no, it'd be nice if people like." I'm like, "Everyone loves Friends. That's what they did on the show Friends. They just."
Yeah.
And she's like, "No, that's not how the like what." She's like, "What about that lonely guy? What is he supposed to just talk to some weirdo next to him?" And I was like, "Maybe."
You need two different types of coffee
shops.
Or
how about this? You, instead of using the coffee shop as your fucking office, why don't you go to a library? And she's like, "Yeah, but libraries are disgusting. And they're full of homeless people." And I was like, "See, now you're being..."
And I kind of agree with her because now, you know, TJ and I being entrepreneurs and don't have an office, like I spend a lot of time in coffee shops, like doing work and stuff like that, right?
Why can't people work at home? I don't get that.
Try and work with a four-year-old and a newborn, right?
Well, you just need that somebody just needs to make an app that knows by location when you go into the coffee shop, and then everyone can check in to, okay, I don't want to use Wi-Fi. So then you can predetermine who wants to be social and who doesn't.
Or just have two types of coffee shops. One's for entrepreneurs, one has lead paint, so you have no service in there.
Yeah.
I feel like we're solving problems right now.
A lot of restaurants nowadays are starting to rent out their space during the day for people to use them as like a coffee shop.
Yeah, that's
like,
right.
Mammy's does this. Ron rents it out during the day.
Oh,
great. So you can go there during the day and you can just sit down. There's like a coffee station he sets up, and then you pay like a fee and it's like super cheap, but
shared,
I guess,
workspace.
Shared workspace. But I guess over like a whole year, it's cheaper than going to a coffee shop and paying $5 every day for a coffee.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, a friend of mine pointed me on to that because he knows I'm working in coffee shops.
Crazy.
I don't drink coffee, so it doesn't really fucking matter.
You can drink kombucha. Speaking of which, yes. Bruce made us, we didn't mention, but
nice work.
No wine today. We're drinking a delicious blackberry kombucha, Bruce.
Yeah, it's blackberry and cooked out with a little bit of ginger, lime leaf, and lemongrass.
Freaking delicious.
Like it.
And you wonder why we always put you on a plant-based profile.
Yeah, this is like, like on par with a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Just need some gin in it, like TJ said.
A little splash, a little pin, a couple fingers.
There you go.
I think he was just calling you his bitch. That's what he was doing. Make the plant shit. How did you guys meet, by the way?
We met at the Coastal Harbor Hotel. We opened that hotel together, and we just hit it off, and we wanted to do something on our own, so we formed Ono Vancouver, and now we've got a bunch of different clients that we're basically helping out through our 20 years of experience. So we're basically selling our mind, and now we're pretty busy doing that, and we're doing really well, and as well as a lot of private dining that we're doing, and event planning.
Yeah, so neither one of you is in an actual kitchen right now, right?
Still growing up.
No.
We both are out of kitchens.
Well, we're in kitchens as consulting chefs.
No, but like, not like actually like working.
No, home grind. Kitchen, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you miss it?
There's aspects that I miss for sure. Like one of them I think I mentioned last time is having that spot for like experiments that I can just kind of put things, you know, like have that little testing ground. And then the camaraderie of like pumping out a huge dinner rush and just kind of feeling that adrenaline. That's definitely
getting through a rush. Yeah.
Well, it's kind of funny because our next episode, I'm going to preview this right now, I guess, but Mickey's not very excited because he actually has to do some homework. But
he's making me read books, man.
Yeah. Our next episode, we're going to be doing an entire episode dedicated to Kitchen Confidential. Anthony Bourdain's book. So awesome. It's a new thing we're going to be doing once a month if someone does his homework, where we have to.
Maybe
so
I already finished.
You
got to
read that book. That's a great challenge.
Yeah.
No.
You won't be able to put it down.
But one of the things that's in that book is he spends basically the entire chapter talking about what it is to do a service. And I mean, all of us having you guys as cooks and us working in front of house, we've seen it all the time. But it's really illuminating to the way he writes about it and talks about how much he loves that part. But the day-to-day grind, the being in the shit and understanding the flow of service and you know, dealing with, you know, other chefs and being on the line. And The one thing I've always been fascinated with chefs, and you guys can illuminate on this. How the fuck do you guys time out shit together? Like when you call out to the other guy on your other end and you say, be ready with this dish in 3 minutes because I'm going to be ready in 3 minutes. Like my brain's just like, how do you know that the food's going to be like, I guess obviously doing it just long enough, you would know how to do it. But I'm like, man, I would totally screw that up so many times.
It's hard to explain. Literally.
It's a dance, man. It is. Having a dancing partner, like me and Bruce, we sit on a line and we already know we what each other's to do. Well, maybe not.
Figuratively speaking. Maybe no, some tango, maybe.
Yeah.
But like, no,
but yeah,
like,
no, it's really like,
I gotta have these.
I already know what he's doing. Like, yeah. I don't even need to talk to him. We look at each other. We say, okay, how? Like, we don't even need to ask, like, how long? Like, 2 minutes for this.
Because you know that what you're working on and, like, the cooking time, like, how it should look and when it's ready or when it's to sit.
And it's probably
stuff,
similar
right?
to a lot what you guys do, right? After doing 14 or 13 episodes, you probably kind of anticipate what, you know, Mickey's going to ask or what Jamie's going to ask. And, like,
yeah,
you kind of
yeah,
ping
yeah,
pong off each
really.
Other.
Yeah.
Because, but, you know, you could put two different chefs in that same situation with the same recipes and this and that, but it's a completely different service, right?
Yeah.
There's like this kind
well,
of
same thing in the bar too as well. If you work with a really good bartender, you know like when someone's turning and even just like working in a space, just something as simple as like your movement and where you are standing can be like if you...
Or like the other one is like when you see like, you know, I've seen this a million times on TV with Gordon Ramsay or even in person, like the chef will be like, all right, two chicken, two this, two this, two this, two this. And then he'll write off another chit. And the chef, as you're cooking, you have to go to remember all these things. I'm like,
well, that's where our training comes in.
And
that's
like,
actually.
I would be like, he'd be like, oh, I need that, whatever, ready. And I'm like, oh, shit, I forgot it.
Yeah, Jamie would get the temps all wrong. Shit would be burning.
That's why they do mise en place for 12 hours ahead of time before service to make sure that that's so easy to execute, pull that chicken out, it's
yeah,
ready to
total
go.
Total banquet
right?
style. Yeah,
but
absolutely.
Even then, if you got a shitty cook beside that's you, true. You're not, you know, you might be good for first 10 minutes and then you're going to drown. Man.
It accumulates.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, have you guys ever worked with someone that you just like literally want to throttle?
Hundreds of people.
Yeah.
What kind of question is that?
Name names, but there are a lot of.
Can you name names?
Oh, I could sit here all day naming names. I'm
well,
not going to.
You bring up a really good point, actually, because that having someone not qualified to be where you are at in your station or on the bar or
well,
wherever.
Attitude too. When you're in the shit, if you have one person that's sour, like you gotta tell them to go home because it's it'll bring down the whole ship.
Absolutely. Or on the other end, if you have a cook that's overconfident and like thinks he's the shit, and then when it comes down to like actually execution, he's got nothing. Yeah. It's like.
God. Actually, that would be Jamie, I think, actually. Yeah, I retract my previous statement.
That's it. I'm that charmer who just walks in like, I got this baby.
He's speechless. We did it. Yes.
I got nothing to say. Yeah. Okay, cool. Anything you want to ask these guys?
Well, I just want to say thank you guys so much for coming on. I don't know about you, Jamie, but I'm super pumped just to be involved with the event.
And we might be involved.
The more
glad to have
we,
you there.
We
yeah.
might be involved, actually.
Yeah.
So we
the more
we,
I find out about it and about the charity and stuff like that, the more I can't recommend enough to people listening to go get a ticket, go check it out, or just reach out to us via our email or these guys at Ono.
Ono
Vancouver,
Shipped in the Hood.
And if you can help out in any way, if you just want to donate.
One way that would be a huge help is we're running a silent auction. Well, Dan's like, so you'll be running the silent auction. We're going to have a 50-50 draw as well. But the silent auction is, we've got some great prizes lined up. So I'll put it out there if anybody listening or you guys know anybody that wants to donate to the silent auction, that's going to be a big money generator for the project. So if anybody wants to contribute by donating a gift basket or a gift card or something bigger, if they have it, it's all good.
I'll see if I might have a few people who might be interested to do that, actually. So.
All right, Vancouver. And if you're listening.
Which you are. Obviously,
we might just auction you in a private.
I can do. What services can I provide? Let me.
TJ and I will be on the auction as well.
Well, you guys will do like
for
a
dancing,
like
for
a
dance.
Home chef thing. Yeah, tango lessons.
Oh,
yeah.
You guys should do that
Bruce.
For the next one. Remember when Elaine on Seinfeld? They have the auction, and she has to auction off Kramer, and he just falls off the stage. He's so bad.
Well, so I can. I'll auction off a free DJ lesson. How about that?
Awesome.
You guys can auction.
You're
off.
On.
Yeah, that's we're holding it.
I'll auction
8 hours.
I'll auction off how to play basketball because I'm so great.
Oh yeah, you're gonna want to pass on that,
price. Jamie. You could be the sommelier for our private diner dinner that we auction off.
Yeah, there you go. I can do that.
Okay, perfect.
Absolutely.
We got a sommelier for our private dinner that we're gonna auction off.
There you go. Good. Yeah. Look at you contributing. And as Jamie was about to mention, I think is we actually will
might
be
doing
there.
a live
podcast. On location.
No, you're going to make it happen.
We're going
to.
We're going to make it happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll have some swag to give out and we'll be able to document a lot of the chefs because we're now on our like back of house kick because screw cocktails. We decided for a little bit on this podcast anyways.
We haven't had a sommelier on yet, have we?
No. Well,
what's wrong with me?
Dude, you're failing.
I know.
Aren't failing. You one?
No, I know, but I mean like.
A different sommelier.
Someone better than me.
So we'll be there to document all the chefs that are contributing.
And do some interviews.
And just get a general sense of the vibe and everything like that. Maybe we'll do some dancing.
It'd be amazing, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Very cool.
Gentlemen, this has been fantastic. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having us, guys.
We wish you both best of luck. We'll be seeing you soon. Again, Chefs in the Hood happening on October 20th. Do check it out. Buy some tickets. Spread it along to your friends. As always, you can find our podcast here on iTunes and Stitcher. Send us any emails or any questions or what is you want gifts?
I want cat gifts. So trackandfoodpod@gmail.com. Send us anything, man. Really, like I'm bored all the time. Okay. Like send me some animal stuff.
And if you have any feedback, our new logo just went up. Mick has been having some good time with that. So let us know if you guys have any feedback on that one.
Let us know if it melts your brain or if it's like shitty or good or whatever.
We're gonna be doing some, hopefully having some swag out soon, and then
Jamie wants to do like designer t-shirts. I like your guys' t-shirts. Okay. We didn't even mention those.
Let me know.
You can get swag from Ono to
farmtolabel.com.
farmtolabel.com.
They'll be at the event as well.
I like the color. It's like an emerald green.
Heather green.
No,
I'm kind of colorblind.
I want like dirty rock and roll t-shirts.
Yeah, he wants like some weird designer ones. I don't know. We'll work it out.
Enough of that.
Pins for sure, though.
Hey, we didn't talk about brunch today.
Yes.
You guys like brunch? Hey, yes.
I like brunch.
Fuck. Anyway. All right.
We don't want to talk about brunch. Brunch is like retired for the remainder of this podcast's life, I think.
Yeah, now we're just rambling. Thanks for checking us out. Hopefully I'll have an article up soon, and we'll check you next time. Have a good day.
Thanks, guys.